We're going to reconvene the meeting. And today we're going to hear from Representative Loon. You have your bill, House File 1822. Would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair. I would move that File 1822 be held over for possible inclusion in another tax bill.
Whenever you're ready, Representative Loon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll be brief. My bill would propose that we create a tax reform commission. And we've had tax reform commissions in the past, but this is a slightly different animal. Ones that have been done recently have been either done by executive order from the governor of the state of Minnesota and some other reiterations. I think what's unique about what I'm proposing would be a 15-member commission, both legislators and people from the private sector, experts in taxation, economics, accounting. And my hope would be that through a bipartisan group of legislators and tax and economics experts, that some product could be proposed to reform our tax system. You know, as recently as Tuesday, there was yet another article out in the paper about the Tax Foundation looking at the business climates in the various states. Minnesota, again, is ranking towards the bottom with a less than desirable tax rating in there, I think 45th out of 50 states. This is not news to those of us that follow these things carefully. And so I'm hoping that through, a bipartisan effort with the goal of actually producing a legislative product at the end of this group study, that we could look at some viable solutions that could actually move through a legislature and perhaps be embraced by a governor and signed, that would create a fairer, more transparent system, one that has a keen eye towards job creation and a more favorable climate for attracting and keeping businesses in our state, and simple to administer. And I know those are a tall order and things that we talk about that are much harder to achieve than to discuss, but that would be the ultimate goal. Madam Chair, if I could, I would like to offer one brief oral amendment, and I did discuss this with the chair before he had to go leave to present a bill in another committee, but line 3.16 of the bill has a date for the commission to report to the legislature and then to submit a legislative draft. The bill as written right now says July 1st, 2013. I would like to strike that and insert March 1st, 2013.
Okay. Does staff have the amendment?
It's an oral amendment, Madam Chair.
Okay. And we'll just incorporate that since it's your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. And Representative Loon, I understand there are some testifiers today, Mr. Mergens.
Yes, we do have a few testifiers, if they would like to come forward.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. My name is Michael Mergens. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Larkin Hoffman. And I devote a significant portion of my practice to property tax appeals, where I represent both landowners and one particular city. So I have a fairly unique perspective that I see both sides of this issue. And I'm here in support of this bill today because I have seen, as the property tax system has faced the real estate downturn that we have been hit with the last few years, the problems of the system have been accentuated. And I think the idea of a commission to look at ways to fix the errors that are there, to create a more efficient system, and to find a way to make the system work better for everybody is a great idea. And what I wanted to do this morning is just share with all of you some of the things that I share with people who call me and say, this is what I am facing. And the number one thing that I get from everyone that calls is, I've lost 30% of my value, but my tax bill keeps going up. What can I do? So the first thing that I have to explain to anyone who comes in with that question is that what you can appeal is the value of your property. Your actual tax bill is a matter of mathematics. The problem that you will face is the first system that you have to go through is to appeal that to the tax court. You have to file a petition every year that you want to challenge your assessed value. A lot of times that will require you to file 3 to 4 petitions before you actually get an answer. It is not uncommon for it to take 4 years to get a decision on whether your assessed value is correct. The problem is every single year you need to pay a new filing fee, you need to pay a new messenger fee, and for a lot of my clients who are smaller businesses who have property values from the $1 to $8 million, it's already tight for them to get relief. They are already facing obstacles because of the downturn that makes it difficult to make their payments. And it's not just my clients, but in most cases that bill gets passed along to the tenants through their lease. So it is affecting a lot of small businesses, both as property owners and as renters. The next problem that they will face is you go through the tax court, you are going to go through a system where you are going to have to turn over all of your information, and then you're going to have a set of rules that has so disconnected what market value is today from what assessed value really equates to in the assessment value, and I'll give you one specific example. Years ago in a Supreme Court case in 1995, they decided that you have to value it based on market numbers. So that means you use a hypothetical market rent, hypothetical market expenses, and hypothetical vacancy. I had a client whose building was 42% vacant, who was facing additional tenants that were defaulting, that were not paying their rent, which on the open market meant his building had almost no value. There would have been few purchasers that would have bought that building knowing that they had to go in and evict tenants who weren't paying and then had to try to find tenants in one of the toughest markets we faced to fill vacancies. But in the terms of tax assessment, we couldn't use 42% vacancy. We had to use 10% vacancy. Just that change alone effectually meant a difference of $1 million in value. So he was paying tax on $1 million in value that he could never see on the open market. And that's the type of things that when clients call me, they say, how can this be? How can the law say that I should be assessed on my fair market value of my building, and on a $4 million building, it's that disconnected? And those are the type of things that I think we can look at and fix with the commission. I think one of the other things is as you go through tax court, they have a system where you will get a trial date. In my 6 years of practicing in property tax appeals, I have never seen a case go to trial on the first trial date, often referred to as the first setting. Either party has the right to call and request a continuance, which means effectively for the tax court, I'm guessing they have someone who spends a majority of their time answering the telephone from requests for people to continue a court hearing. It will then go to a second court hearing. And again, it usually does not go to trial on that second court hearing. At the second court hearing, you'll normally be scheduled for a pretrial hearing with the judge. It's not uncommon to have 3 or 4 different pretrial hearings. So if you file a petition today, you will be lucky to have a trial by 2015. And each year during that process, you have to file a new appeal. And if at any point in time you miss the appeal by April 30th, that appeal is kicked out. And technically, they are each separate trials, which means you could get one in 2015 and you'd still have to go to trial again in 2016 for the next year's appeal, and then again on the next year's appeal. And from the city side, from the county side, you are creating a massive amount of uncertainty where they're trying to budget, but yet they have a potential to give refunds with interest from 4 or 5 years ago in many instances. And it's a system that I don't think is benefiting the counties. And from my clients, I know it's not benefiting the property owners. So those are the types of things that I think a commission like this would be a great opportunity to look at, to see where there is opportunities to make the system more efficient for both sides and to more appropriately ensure that the assessed value reflects the market that we're in today. And I'm happy to take any questions. Otherwise, that's what I wanted to share with you this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mergens. Members, we have two other testifiers, but I understand Representative Lesh, you have a question.
Yes. Thank you. To the testifier, and this commission would solve this issue, presumably, of being taxed on values which you couldn't realize in the real market. I'm wondering if it would have solved it during the boom years, too, when I was being taxed on maybe 70-80% of what I could get for the value of my property. And if that happened, I wonder what the implications would be, because you would have seen property tax valuations rocket during those years, and I and other commercial property owners probably would have freaked out saying, are you kidding me? This is just a bubble. What are you doing to me here? So I'm wondering, would the commission solve it on the other side of the equation too, and what would be the implication for rapidly increasing valuations?
Mr. Mergens.
Chair, member, thank you for the question. You know, I think this is one of the things why we really do need a commission, because I think the system that is there, rather than just looking at small specific issues, the commission gives you an opportunity to look at the system in general, to address very things like what you are talking about, and raise questions about, is the way in which we ask assessors to place a new value on all the property within their system, within their taxing district every year, is that the best system? Because the reality is they can't track. They are put into a position where they are forced to make gross determinations and apply, in a lot of instances, a percentage increase for each category of buildings to everything that exists, and they have a very difficult time tracking the sales market. I don't know that in our lifetimes we will ever see a boom like we witnessed. Frankly, I hope we do. But I think the commission definitely could look at ways to make sure that assessed value is tracking both the ups and the downs more quickly and more responsibly.
Thank you, Mr. Mergens. Representative Hortman, I understand you have a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is for the bill author, so I can wait until the testimony is done.
Thank you. We have Jill Larson and Tom Hesse.
Oh, are we done with him?
Oh, okay. Representative Lesh Lincheski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a question for Mr. Is it Mergens?
Mergens.
Okay. Nice to see you. And I apologize, you know, we had a fire alarm or whatever, and we were coming in, and as you sat down, I caught you were a Larkin Hoffman attorney, and I thought I heard you say there's one city that you work in a lot. Is that what you, I'm not sure, and can you tell us what city that is?
Mr. Mergens.
It is a city in Anoka. I am not here on behalf
okay.
of them.
Okay.
So I don't know that I can.
Okay, no problem. I just,
thank
can you, Madam
Lincheski.
Chair, Larkin has, about how many attorneys are at Larkin Hoffman?
Mr. Mergens.
Madam Chair, member, thank you. I believe it is 70, but I do not know for sure.
Well, Madam Chair.
Representative Lincheski.
Larkin Hoffman is headquartered in Bloomington, and they have a lot of excellent attorneys who work on a lot of land use issues in Bloomington, so very well aware of your firm. But I do, you know, I just, hearing what you're talking about, I'm getting a little confused on the bill now. The bill is a broad tax reform commission. We're hearing your testimony about assessment and valuation, and I don't know how much you are aware of the last year's bill, which came up with this new market value exclusion, which actually exacerbated the problem you're going through now with even more tax value excluded now for tax purposes and enhances the confusion. But my concern in trying to think about all this is, you know, I'm just thinking when I was on the city council, a lot of cities have a board of review, an appeal process, and we watch your firm come before that board, and we appoint those people on the city council, and they do, you know, they're pretty top-notch commercial industrial experts who can help assist with that. And I know a lot of cities don't have that thorough of a process. And, you know, there's a lot of attorneys working on all these things that you mentioned, and I think they are a problem. And then on our end as a state, when cities are going through huge abatements, when you succeed, we have huge budget swings then locally. And you've seen, for example, in the city of Bloomington, sometimes we've sort of gone into deficits as you've prevailed. And, you know, you've said this hotel shouldn't pay that much in tax. And you should prevail in court, and it's supposed to work that way. And I understand the lag, and there's a lot of problems with that. So I'm not really sure where in the commission what the author's intent is to get into all that. You know, we do also have the tax court. This bill is rightfully here, but the issues you're talking about, the judicial committee oversees the tax court issues. So I think we would need to understand a little bit how Representative Loon and your issues come together. And I did read the bill, and I'm just wondering, Madam Chair, if what Mr. Merkins is addressing really is lines 2.26 through 2.28, which is, it's really, the bill is very broad, except for that sentence says that we're specifically going to address this one thing. And you know, I'm just trying to figure out if that's what you're here for, because this commission, and we've seen a lot of legislators bipartisanly try to pass these commissions. You know, I personally believe that's our job. We are the Tax Reform Commission, the Minnesota Tax Committees. But I'm just kind of trying to figure out how you're connecting this, what you said, with this bill. And maybe it's the question for Representative Loon, but Mr. Merkins,
well,
just...
Representative Lencheski, Mr. Merkins, you can certainly comment to it. I do want to just give members just a heads up that we do have the tax expenditure report that we would like to go over today as well, and because of the fire drill or whatever it was, that has put us a titch behind schedule. But certainly, Mr. Merkins, if you want to comment to that, but then we also have two testifiers after that we'd like to move to, and then Representative Loon, if you want to kind of wrap it up from there.
Yes.
Mr. Merkins.
Madam Chair, thank you. I will be very brief. What I wanted to do today is share with you some of the issues that I see. And from the tax court perspective, I think part of it is how value is required to be placed on property within the tax court. And I certainly see that as something the commission can look at. And I think in a broader sense, there are a number of issues where the commission can look at the system in general and say, these are the areas that need to be fixed, that need adjustments. And provide an opportunity on that front, and that is why I wanted to be here today to give my thoughts, and I appreciate the opportunity to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Merkins. With that, if Jill Larson and Tom Hesse want to come to the table, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Jill Larson with Minnesota Business Partnership. Very briefly, just want to make a couple of comments. Like the idea of Representative Loon's bill, I think our perspective is that the more discussion and information and education about tax reform and the need to take another look at our tax system and whether or not it works in the 21st century is a good idea. There have been other commissions, obviously. This is, I think, a unique perspective because it is legislatively focused. I think it allows a legislative panel and some experts to do kind of a deeper dive on these issues. And I also like that it incorporates looking at both state and local taxes, because there is such an interrelationship between state and local fiscal environment. I like that it brings in discussion on demographic changes, because those are clearly issues that are going to affect both our tax and spending systems. I'd kind of like to see a spending reform commission as well. But so in closing, I'd just like to say I think this is a good idea. More discussion information, the better. Thank you.
Mr. Hesse.
Madam Chair, members, for the record, my name is Tom Hesse. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. We're also interested in any avenues to discuss, you know, a more competitive tax structure for Minnesota businesses, so this is certainly a vehicle for that. And I think there is value in getting together a bipartisan group of legislators and experts, whether it's through this commission or Representative Lencheski through the Tax Committee itself, to look at that question. We need to find a strategy and a way to reform Minnesota's tax system going forward, and we'll be happy to join in that conversation. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Hesse. We do have one more testifier, but I didn't know if anybody had any questions for Mr. Hesse or Ms. Larson at all. Seeing none, we will see Susan Von Mosch from the Department of Revenue would like to speak. Is it Van Mosch or Von Mosch? Okay. Ms. Von Mosch, if you could state your name for the record and where you're from.
Thank you. My name is Susan Von Mosch. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Tax Policy for the Department of Revenue. And I'd like to thank you for giving us the opportunity to speak with you today about tax reform. Commissioner Franz shares your concerns about the tax system and the fact that it needs to be more simple, transparent, efficient, fair, and equitable. Governor Dayton also has a strong interest in reforming taxes, and he looks forward to working with the House and the Senate tax committees in reforming the tax code. The Department of Revenue has always been willing to support the modeling of various legislative proposals and to provide expert and confidential information when asked, and that is not going to change. We are concerned that this proposal calling for a commission will add to the already stretched resources of the Department of Revenue. We share your concern that the tax system is in need of repair. And as we looked at this the system early on, we looked for some examples that we could follow for how tax reform has worked in the past, and we were struck by President Reagan's 1980 effort, his successful 1980s effort, that was led by an executive partnership, the Department of Treasury, in partnership with Congress. And that was how the executive branch decided to structure our tax reform effort. So it's being led by the Department of Revenue. And whatever you believe is the substance of the policies, we encourage you to look at different ways of approaching tax reform, and we look forward to working with you in this effort. Thank you for allowing me to speak with you today.
Thank you, Ms. Mosch. Now, Representative Fortman, I understand that you have a question for Representative Loon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Loon, sorry about that. I have three questions about the proposal. It strikes me that this is our job, really. And when I look at the duties on page 2 from line 2.22, really going on down to the whole description of the duties, it seems to me those are the duties of the tax committee. The list of the members is, you know, there's bipartisanship sought in the membership. We have bipartisanship here. Subdivision 4, per diem and expenses. We're already paid per diem and expenses, and we could be paid one day a month to come in during the interim if the tax chair wanted to really take this on and really be more comprehensive and do some shared learning and support some reform. I'm sure members would come in when the legislature is not in session. We have staff. We have tons of to me it seems like tons of staff. They probably don't feel like it's tons of staff, but at Subdivision 5, we'd be creating another set of staff to analyze tax proposals when we already have nonpartisan House research and the Department of Revenue's policy staff. So my first question is, aren't we the Tax Reform Action Commission, and shouldn't we be doing this ourselves? My second question is, why would we create another commission when we don't have a very good track record of implementing the recommendations of the previous commissions? And then my third question is this a model bill from somewhere, because it has findings? And my understanding is, in Minnesota, when we draft bills, we don't have findings, and we don't put those in the statutes.
Representative Lim.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Hortman. I appreciate the questions, and I'll try to go in the order you asked them, but if I forget and get out of order, just prompt me, please. You know, first, yes, there have been other commissions, and yes, it is the work, certainly, of the House and Senate Tax Committee to look at our tax structure and that. However, in my opinion, and again, I've been on this committee now for, this is my fourth year and in the legislature, we don't tend to spend a lot of time digging in depth into these types of endeavors. And for anybody who's spent time, and I know there's members on this committee that have, looking at our tax structure, digging into it, it takes an inordinate amount of time, and so it's my thinking by actually memorializing within legislation designated members to specifically work on that, and throughout the interim in between sessions and come forward with a proposal would help then the tax committees in full to take on those studies, review them, take the legislative product, and then further shape that for legislative action. So that's my intent. And certainly there are debates within the committee on taxes. Are they too much? Are they too little? In addition to the actual structure of how we collect taxes and what they are. And so by the directive within this legislation that the proposal be revenue neutral, I'm hoping that that takes that off the table. So we look at just the structure of what types of taxes we collect, what effects those have, and sort of hopefully leave some of those other arguments for another time. And so that's kind of the purpose behind it. With regards to the per diem and that, I'm quite certain that the per diem, and it states in the bill that it is not for legislative members. It would be for private sector people who would agree to be participants in this. In this commission, in this process. And did I hit them all, or did I miss one?
Representative Portman.
Well, the question was whether this was a model bill from somewhere, because of the findings section. It's just not something that the reviser puts in our bills when we ask for bills to be drafted. So if you can answer that. But also, there's a fiscal note, and I don't think the citizens of the state of Minnesota should pay an additional $400,000 to some other people to do something which is actually our job. And if your bill doesn't pass, I hope that you'll encourage the speaker to appoint a group of members to do this work. There's really no reason. Anybody we've asked from the state of Minnesota to come in and talk to this committee, they've all been willing to share their knowledge and expertise. And I think we have done exactly the kind of in-depth review that you're talking about through looking at the tax incidence report and other data and having different professors come in. So I think that regardless of what happens with your legislation, this work can be done, and I don't think it should cost the citizens of the state of Minnesota another $400,000 on top of what they pay us.
Representative Loon, did you wish to respond?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Portman. And I actually would echo in many of your sentiments there, and I appreciate the testifier from the Department of Revenue. First, yes, it would certainly be my hope that private citizens who would help us in this endeavor would offer up their time and expertise. Many of them have been very generous in that in the past on other issues and not asking for any payment of expenses for their time or travel. And so certainly that would be my hope, and I think it's out there as it has been paid in the past, and so it's out there, but I certainly would be open to whatever could be worked out and to not have that be the case. With regards to the fiscal note as well, the department just testified that, sort of the workload and that would add to their workload, and so that's a good portion of the fiscal note. And, I really hope they'll go back and look at this. I mean, it's my understanding that the governor is engaging in the whole effort of looking at our tax system as well, and Commissioner Franz has started meetings around the state. That certainly is their job, and we do ask them to do modeling, so I would hope that would be within the purview of their current work. If that is our job as members of the tax committee here, as many have expressed that already, I guess I don't understand, and the Department of Revenue is partners with us in that endeavor, why they would have a fiscal note indicating that, looking to make reform to our tax system, which legislators and the governor, many of us have all said needs to be done, would cost an additional amount of money. I guess I'm not clear that I understand why that revenue note reads as it does, but I'll leave it at that.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I've been looking at the fiscal note as well, and by the way, I happen to concur with the earlier comments. I think this is a charge that the chair of this committee could handle with a special subcommittee, and or using the current structure, or the speaker could appoint a special committee. But this fiscal note has quite a range. You heard the reference to 400,000. One way I calculated it would be 400. Another way I calculated 540,000. It could go, depending on the staffing levels, as high as almost 900,000. And we are facing a multi-billion dollar deficit, according to the November forecast, in the next biennium. So I think we do have to be careful how we look at various expenditures. And, Madam Chair, I would suggest if the decision by the majority caucus is to move this forward as a part of an omnibus bill, this fiscal note does need to be clarified to exactly what we plan on expending. Because there is that wide range. The other thing I would point out under the assumptions here by the department, they make reference that the House and Senate could each provide the equivalent of one research and our fiscal analyst staff to assist during the interim. And I wonder if the author or the department, being that this is their fiscal note, has had any conversations with either our committee staff or Patrick McCormick, who's the head of the nonpartisan research department, to see what other obligations the House research staff may have during the interim, and if that's a practical request or not. So I think there has to be several conversations. And on that last question, Madam Chair, I don't think we need to have that answered at this point unless the bill is going to formally come before us as part of an omnibus bill, which seemed to be indicated by the earlier motion that might be what's going to happen.
Well, Representative Carlson, if you actually look in the fiscal note, it cites the references and resources, and it did refer to Mr. McCormick and the fiscal analyst staff and so forth. So that was all taken into consideration.
But well, Madam Chair, I understood it was taken into consideration, Carlson. But I don't know what the outcome of that consideration was.
Okay. Well, thank you, Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair,
Representative Loon, yeah.
If I may interject, I spoke with our one of our fiscal analysts, Ms. Templin, and she did point out to me I did amend the bill as well and move the date up, which will affect the fiscal note and would bring it down. Now again, I would raise some strenuous concerns about the fiscal note and sort of the hiring on of additional staff or paying of staff for doing things that I see to be within the purview of this committee's and the department's current work. However, I just thought I should point that out.
Thank you, Representative Loon. Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Loon, I have a few questions, and so maybe it'd just be easiest to answer one at a time. And I was curious about Representative Hortman's question about if this is model legislation from anywhere and sort of where it's coming from, if you...
Representative Loon?
Yes, Representative Knuth. It was a proposal that Representative Broad had introduced in the past.
Okay.
Representative Knuth?
And then, thank you, Madam Chair. And then another question, because, you know, I've tried to get on various commissions, not necessarily the sort of commission or tax commission, and have not been appointed, and I think I'm just curious what your views about members who want to be involved with this sort of work but may not get appointed to the commission. Would you encourage them to come? Would they be able to sit at the table? You know, that sort of thing. They're sort of details, but it can be harder to follow on an issue you care about when you're not actually appointed, and I just was curious how you see other members potentially who may not be appointed being involved with this commission.
Thank you. I think, you know,
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With any issue for members within this legislative body, you may be interested in issues that are before a committee that you don't happen to serve on, but you're still able to follow what's happening, to perhaps offer testimony, engage with colleagues who are on that committee. And I wouldn't expect this to work any differently in terms of commission. Certainly I would expect that members, if this comes to pass, members who are interested will speak with their respective leaders about their interest in serving on the committee. Certainly the meetings would be open and members able to file the proceedings. And then finally, again, it would be a proposal that would then have to go through the legislative process as a piece of legislation. And so the tax committee members would be fully engaged, even those that hadn't had the opportunity to serve on the commission, in reviewing and debating and amending that product.
Representative Gottwald.
Madam Chair. I had just a couple more questions, and I'll just ask them together. One is, in terms of the finding and sort of the focus, I agree we want to be concerned about job creation and investment in our tax system, but I'm just curious if that our tax system isn't the only thing that impacts the job climate in Minnesota. For example, our well-educated workers, our strong infrastructure, quality of life, things like that. And will this commission consider those other things as it's doing the work of coming up with proposals for reform? And then in addition, do you see any way to try to help move some of these things forward? I mean, we've had a 21st century tax commission, and there is that report, and a lot of work went into it, and I think there's some good ideas, some that I agree with more or less, but it just sort of sat there. And I could pick another one. You know, Governor Pawlenty appointed the climate change advisory group. I've got a report this thick in my office, and it's just sitting there. And while I think there is a movement behind tax reform, I'm just curious what strategies or actions you think might help actually implement some of the reforms from one of these commissions. So both the questions of not just the silo of taxes in terms of our job climate, but also and also how you see actually implementing the commission recommendations moving forward.
Representative Loon.
Well, I think certainly when you look at a state's overall economy and the things that impact its economic vitality, there are issues other than taxes, to be certain. I mean, your regulatory arena, level of education and how skilled your workforce is, you know, there's a number of things to look at. But the focus of this commission would be on our tax structure. And the idea would be looking at our tax structure and how it could be perhaps changed to impact that one segment with regards to economic climate, which is our tax structure. Also, not just for businesses, but for citizens with regards to how transparent is our tax system, how understandable is it, is it fair? And those are all things that this commission would work on. And again, from the standpoint of you know, other commissions and what has happened or not happened with them. Again, I think that what's unique about this is that it would be composed primarily of legislators, people who work in sort of the political and legislative arena on a day-to-day basis, and with the idea of having it be a commission that doesn't just produce an interesting study that gathers dust on a shelf somewhere, but being able to pull elements from those studies that have already been done and then look to the art of what may be possible. Where do we have agreement? What can we put forward that may actually be enacted to help improve our tax system? So that would be the goal.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll make this really quick, and if Representative Loon wants to respond, she can. But just a couple things. None of us, myself included, is really excited about another commission. However, my experience in the 3 years that I've been down here is we've been talking about this for a long time, and there's probably a 10-year runway up to now where we've been talking, and frankly, going from talk and studies to actually a bill that we might be able to consider is, I think, the leap that is a positive one in Representative Loon's bill, or in under this commission. And I remember last session when the Governor's 21st Century Commission came out with its report, and I know Chair Lincheski actually authored a bill. And it had a number of really tough provisions, kind of the lightning rod stuff that nobody wants to touch, because you're talking about taxing clothing and food and all these other things and all these cherished expenditures. And so those things are just hand grenades in committee and on the floor and in public discussion. And so I think this is a good way to do it. It provides some cover for legislators. It provides nice interaction between the executive branch, the public and the legislature to come up with the draft bill, and maybe a bit in contrast to whatever the governor's initiative is, which I'm not super familiar with. It is a broader-based coalition, and we do set some an outline of kind of guiding principles in the bill, and all of that is really, I think, a positive statement. So as much as none of us wants to have another commission, I think this one helps us cut through the fog and maybe get to something actionable next session. And I might offer a friendly amendment at some point in time that would preclude the political parties from issuing campaign mail cards against the members of the commission for the recommendations that they put forward, because this thing is just a political landmine, and anybody who signs up for this deserves a Medal of Honor, not mail cards against them in their next campaign.
Thank you, Representative Downey. We've got Gottwalt, Marquardt, and Loeffler, and then at that point, Representative Luna, if you could wrap it up, and then we'll be able to hear from Mr. Wilson on the tax expenditure report. So, Representative Gottwalt.
I'll keep it short. I just want to thank Representative Loon for bringing this forward. I would ditto what Representative Downey just indicated. I've had a lot of concerns, and this comes from Minnesotans, members, and we've all talked about it bipartisanly. People are concerned about our tax structure. They want to see something done about it. It's not something you do on the fly where you just kind of make something up and propose it. That doesn't work very well. Taxes need to be thought through. A commission's a good way to vet good ideas, think them through carefully, and then bring them forward as legislation. It's time we did more of it. If this commission can help us do that, I think it's a great idea. I would personally like to see the commission, Representative Loon, if this moves forward, take a look at the balance between property taxes and sales and use taxes on a budget-neutral basis. Do we need to shift away from property taxes towards more sales and use, and if so, what kind? That sort of thing needs to be talked about here in Minnesota, and if the commission can help get that going, I'm all in favor of it. Thanks for bringing this forward.
Hey, Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One quick comment and one quick question. Currently, there is a property tax working group that Chair Runbeck and Representative Dietrich serve on and has worked for some time and actually coming up with some, I think, very good suggestions. So I would, if this does become, you know, into fruition, that you would work with that. This commission would not just duplicate, and because that work, that group's done a lot of good work. And then one quick question on line 2.28, where it's talking about the commission must specify address ways to do whatever. It says, as well as increasing general capital investment in the state. Representative Loon, are you referring to like education, infrastructure, and quality of life type items with that quote? I'm just not real clear what that means exactly.
Yeah. Representative Loon.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Marquardt. Well, no, I mean, as the author, I was not actually thinking of those things when I'm talking about a general capital investment. It would be more bricks and mortar businesses and capital equipment and those types of things in the business climate. But I could see how one would think about other things. Certainly, as I commented to Representative Knuth's question, there are many things that contribute to a strong economy in the state, in any state, in any entity. The tax structure is one, and that's what this commission would be charged with looking at.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Loon, you keep referring to this as a legislative commission and that one of its strengths is that it's within the legislative branch as opposed to some of the other commissions. But only 6 of your 15 members are legislators. You know, it's a 2-to-1 majority-minority. I mean, it doesn't reflect that kind of bipartisan, broad-based sort of geographic, you know, differences that we all represent around this table. And so my personal thought is that some of the reasons why those other commission reports have just been a two-hour hearing here and another item on the bookshelf has been because they've been done outside of our purview, mostly by people from outside. And it hasn't been that the legislature has really stepped up, done the hard work that we were elected to, and own it. And so, but I really am struck by kind of the language that it would be a legislative commission, but it's primarily people from outside. And could you give us a little rationale about the thoughts beyond that? And then I just want to make one brief comment.
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Loeffler. Yes. You know, but the fact that there's legislators on that, and I understand your questioning about, you know, regional and other concerns, you know, certainly within the House and the Senate and the respective caucuses within each, those are considerations that happen with appointment to anything. And I would expect that the Speaker and the Minority Leader would look at those factors when considering who to suggest as their appointments to this commission. So we would have, you know, voices from various areas of the state represented in those efforts, both from the private sector people as well as the legislators embodied on that commission. And again, I think the unique difference here with other commissions has been economists, tax experts, which we are embodying to have sort of the subject matter experts within this commission, but also legislators who are perhaps more versed in the legislative process, more versed in what may be something that would have a politically viable life in the legislature in terms of ideas, maybe things to move forward in a phased level as opposed to one enormous package, and look at how we would go about actually trying to move forward reforms to our tax system. So that would be how I would view that.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you. And I just wanted to say that I think you haven't embodied in here many of the things that we all aspire towards in terms of simplicity and, you know, competitiveness and revenue adequacy and some of the things that we have worked on in the past, you know, as sort of good government themes. But then I feel like when you set the major goals and duties of the group, it's really much narrower perspective. And, you know, you have that it's to encourage business formation, retention, and expansion in the state. And, you know, I think we all would like to have a healthy and growing economy, but I don't know if that's the major job of the tax system. I think it also, as we've designed it bipartisanly, has also addressed other key values that I think are shared, like making home affordable housing an option by having provisions that help the homestead owner, the homeowner, you know, with property tax refund or homestead credit program. We've always had something in our tax code. You can debate about which ones are the better components, but we've always had something that encourages home ownerships and supports people in affordability of housing. We've always had adjustments to our tax base that encourage people to pursue education. We've always had provisions in our tax code that support a strong nonprofit sector within our state. And so when you focus it only on one set of goals and ignore all those others, I'm afraid we'll end up with potentially a group that puts a lot of effort into trying to meet those goals, and we may end up with an unbalanced product. And so I do have some concern about whether or not the mission and duties of this group need to be broadened and have a broader focus.
And Representative Loon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, and I thank you for your comments and question and looking at this carefully. Again, there are many things that contribute to a state's economy, but no matter where you look, you know, nonpartisan foundations, and we've had many experts come before this committee to testify that our tax structure really is discouraging to many business and entrepreneurs, and looking at Minnesota as a place to locate. Our job creation has certainly been not as vital as we would like. We have suffered in the recession with many other states, but we have really seen a slowdown. And many of these studies point to the fact that Minnesota really is no longer competitive in the tax arena with our tax structure. And we can talk about all of those other things, but I think we need to take a serious look at this. This would not be the first commission to point to the need to do some changes in that area. So, again, it's my hope that this commission would not necessarily recreate the wheel, but we would take a look at studies that have been done before, those themes that keep appearing, and see if we can actually put together a product that would have a chance of getting the support of enough legislators and the governor to actually be enacted. We've heard it over and over from our representatives of our major and small businesses within the state, you know, people who work with the tax code every day on behalf of their clients, who see a need for some transparency and some changes to make it more fair and easier to work with. So in my opinion, the need is clear. And we can debate about the best way to do that. This is a proposal that I think has some merit, and so I'm pleased to have the committee consider it.
And Representative Loon, would you like to renew your motion then to lay this over for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill?
I would. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. And I think that's it that we need to do. Thank you, Representative Loon. Before we get to Mr. Wilson, Dr. Wilson, I would like to have Representative Pimar, are you willing to move the minutes from, what's the date here, February 1st of 2012? So moved. Okay. All those in favor of the minutes from February 1st, 2012, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Move those minutes. Okay. Dr. Wilson.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Paul Wilson from the Tax Research Division at the Department of Revenue.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Nice to be back to the House, and if you have any guidance for me on time, I am willing to take it, but I'll try to speed through things.
Dr. Wilson, just take your time. We're good here till noon. And we could come back tonight if you need more time.
Is that a threat?
It was last night. Dr. Wilson.
Madam Chair, this is the 13th Minnesota Tax Expenditures Report issued February 1st. These reports are mandated by the legislature, mandate going back to 1983. And it's a major project. This report includes estimates for 307 separate items, but of course, some of those have subcategories in them, so you're talking 350, 370 different items with estimates. It's a large project. It takes 12 analysts. About 12 analysts work on it in parts of it. We also have two interns that come in the spring and the summer to do some of the work, led by Carolyn Carlson, without whom this report would never have gotten done. Most work is done in the summer and the fall, so some of these estimates are somewhat dated. They're not all updated for the latest forecast because you just can't get things done in that kind of timely fashion. There's too much in here. But I want to talk today, I want to do three things. I want to talk a bit about tax expenditure as a concept, the idea of a tax expenditure. We were here last year, had a presentation last year on the tax expenditure budget, and I don't want to try to repeat all of that, but I do want to talk about the concept. I'll spend a little bit of time looking at an example from the study of what's in the report, what's not in the report. And then I want to talk about what this is good for. What are the uses the report can be put to? And there are really three perspectives to that. One is sort of a budget, improving budget policy, sort of looking at one tax expenditure at a time, but from a budgeting perspective. Another is a tax reform perspective. How do we use this in tax reform discussions? And finally, the last one is sort of how this report has often been used in the past, which is as a menu of revenue enhancements or tax increases. I want to talk about all three, and I want to give some cautions about how the report is used in those three ways. First of all, in terms of the tax expenditure as a concept, if your only goal were to raise revenue, if that's all you were trying to do with the tax system, I think almost everyone would agree that a broad base and a low rate would be the best way to go. This is sort of a mantra among tax policy specialists is, keep the base broad, keep the rate low. It disrupts the economy less. A lot of advantages of broad base, low rate. But of course, we don't really want to raise money to fund government. If you want to encourage home ownership, then we have a mortgage interest deduction. If you want to recognize or reward combat veterans, we create a combat credit. If you want to help farmers pay for bovine TB testing, then you have a bovine TB credit. If you want to help pay for low-income families pay for child care, you have a refundable child care credit. If you want to increase business startups, you create an angel investment credit. And if you want to help local governments, you exempt interest on local government bonds, so they can borrow at a lower interest rate. All of those are valid goals, and they're all things that are pursued in the tax system. The idea of a tax expenditure is to think about those things as all being things that could have been done with a direct expenditure or an appropriation. In other words, they have a similarity in the sense that you could have done these things elsewhere. If you want to encourage homeownership, there are lots of ways to do that. We have programs through housing finance that encourage homeownership. Certainly the PTR and other property tax things encourage homeownership. There are other ways to encourage homeownership. You could sort of do this in a different ways through a direct appropriation. If you want to reward, I mean, the combat credit basically is $120 a day, $120 per month spent in combat zone. That could be paid as a direct grant by the Veterans Department. They know who the people are. They could just send out checks. It doesn't have to go through a tax form. The bovine TB care could be done directly as the Ag Department, just simply to be helping farmers pay for that. Child care, we have a basic sliding fee program that helps targeted the same people pretty much as our refundable child care credit. The Angel Investment Credit could be designed as a matching grant program. That program is completely coordinated and run by deed, and they tell people what to put in the tax return. They put in the tax return. Our role is just to put in the tax return and cut a check. That could be done directly by deed, but of course it would be a direct appropriation in that case for it. There are a lot of ways to help local governments, as you know. So the idea of a tax expenditure is tax systems used to do a lot of good things, but to think of them as alternative ways of doing things. The difference between a tax expenditure and a direct appropriation or a direct expenditure, in terms of how they are done, it makes a big difference whether it's done through the tax system or done directly. There's no line in the budget for a tax expenditure. If it weren't for this report, there'd be nowhere to look to say how much money is involved in this. There's no regular review process. We talked about review commission. It could do this, but there was a proposal last year, we had a report last year to set up a commission to review tax expenditures. But there's no sort of standard way. This is done quite well in the tax committee at times, but not to the same degree that direct expenditures or direct appropriations are reviewed. Generally, there's no limit on growth. If the tax expenditure grows, there's nobody saying, oh, that's going too fast. Let's trim it a little bit like you do with a direct appropriation. And they're authorized by different committees. So the mortgage interest deduction, that's a tax committee issue. Housing subsidies, trying to promote home ownership, that might be a different committee. And so to think about these things in competition with each other or as alternatives or as integrating one with the other is the idea of a tax expenditure. How can things be coordinated better? How do you do that? So there's also more limited public access to program information because tax data tends to be confidential, so nobody knows who benefits from these things. Whereas if we're direct appropriation, the information would tend to be more public. But the biggest difference, as you all know, is that if you vote for a tax expenditure, you voted for a tax cut. And if you vote for a direct appropriation, you voted for an increase in government spending. And so it's a great bias, and every lobbyist knows. If someone wants to do something, I got an idea, I want to do this, well, could we do that with a tax credit? Because then it would be a tax cut, and it would be easier to sell. So there's quite a difference between doing them both ways, but the idea of a tax expenditure is basically to think about alternative ways and to think about the tax system and its use of these incentives in the same way we do other ways of accomplishing things. Now, some people will claim there's a liberal bias in the whole notion of tax expenditure, and I would say, since this study is often used as a menu for tax increases, I can understand people looking at it that way. But tax expenditure, tax loophole, and tax relief are not three words for the same thing, because tax expenditure tries to make it a neutral term. This doesn't say this is bad or good. It says think about it as a tax expenditure. Tax loophole, some of them I would call tax loopholes, and you might not, but that's a pejorative term. Tax relief, that's a positive term. And I guess what I want to say is that this approach of talking about things as tax expenditure, the Reagan administration in its tax reform, and I was working at Treasury in 1984 and 85, and we were basically told, start with the tax expenditure budget. I was a young green economist, okay, but we were told, start with the tax expenditure budget and examine each one, and we were assigned tax expenditures to evaluate and decide whether they should continue. Some tax expenditures ended up actually growing, and some shrunk, but that was, the tax expenditure budget was a real start for that whole study. The fair tax, broaden the base, lower the rate. Flat tax proposals also usually have broadening of the base. So this whole notion of using the tax expenditure budget, it's a concept that's useful for a lot of different groups. And I think, I have a quote here from Martin Feldstein, just because he's a conservative economist who again sort of thinks about using tax expenditures. Our tax expenditure review committee last year comprised of six six individuals, most of them economists. You had John Spry, that some of you know, on the one hand. You had other people on the other side. Sorry. I don't think of the name, but Jay Kodrowski, that some of you may know the name of. They're on the same thing. Everybody agreed tax expenditure is a very useful way to approach them. So I want to try to get past the idea. It's a very important idea, even no matter what where you're on the political spectrum. Tax expenditure is a very, very useful idea, useful thing to think about. It should be thought of as a non-pejorative term, not as sort of something that you're targeting. It sort of says, let's look at these as something that's trying to accomplish something.
Dr. Wilson, to interrupt you there a little bit, there's some members who have questions. Would it be okay if we had some questions as we go along? And then if we're not done in time, we can call you back to finish the report. But would that be okay?
Mr. Chair, that's your prerogative completely.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't actually have a question. Dr. Wilson, you're a very smart guy, and I always appreciate when you come in, and I appreciate what you do, and this report is very helpful. But I just want to make a point here. That the kind of presuppositions that we're now starting this discussion with, I think, do reflect a bias and a significant one. And I would just like to maybe present an alternative case to these first few slides, and then we can get on to the data. But your comment that you could design a direct expenditure program to meet each of these goals, that's probably true technically. If your central view of the world is the state budget and that it has to, the pluses and minuses have to net out, but they're not equal. And the fundamental difference is that a tax expenditure allows the private sector to do what it will with that money as compared to a direct expenditure where the state takes that money from the private sector and then chooses to disperse it and spend it the way it will. And so there's a fundamental difference between kind of who we trust to engage in that activity between a tax expenditure and a direct appropriation. And I'm looking at your slide number five, and what jumped out at me again is this concept that if the central view of the world is the state budget pie charts and the revenue pie charts, this is probably true. But if your central view of the world is that, you know, we're free people acting in an economy and in a society, and we grant to government certain things, tax expenditures just fundamentally are biased towards free people doing their own thing in the private market. And so I want to make sure we don't start out this discussion with this, I think, highly biased understanding of tax expenditures. It's something that's bugged me ever since I got down here, and we continue to use it. And there is a huge difference between leaving money through a tax credit or some other tax policy in the private sector for private citizens to do what they do best as compared to taking it from them and assuming that we can do what's best down here in the state legislature. And, you know, if our tax rates weren't so high and people weren't feeling so oppressed by them, you know, we'd probably have a heck of a lot less tax expenditures out there. So I'm going to get that alternative perspective out as we start the discussion.
Dr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I understand where you're coming from very well, but I want to just suggest the breadth of people who find this to be a useful concept. I mean, I know you know Dr. Spry. I think you know who he is. Martin Feldstein, I mean, Ronald Reagan. I think there's certainly a point to what you're saying, but if you look at some tax expenditures, if DEED is going to figure out how much the angel investment credit people qualify for, and then tell us how much to put on the tax form, or tell them how much to put on the tax form to get the check back, it's refundable, they get the same amount whether DEED sends them that money directly. All the criteria are done by DEED, not by the Department of Revenue. There's nothing involving the tax code there. That is simply calculating an amount and sending a check. So I don't know how that differs, whether it's a direct expenditure, direct appropriation, or a tax item. And I don't know how, some of the other ones I admit are small items, but I don't know how bovine TB credit differs. If we say you can get a credit for half of the expenditure and send it to us, or if you say the Ag Department will pay half the cost. I don't know how the government's intervention in the economy is different in those two cases. It's exactly the same result. And so you can certainly find examples, and I agree if you give more power to DEED to make decisions about who gets the credit, but our tax credits do that already. deed is the one who does determines and does the rules and applies through it, applies for it. So, that is where I come from, but I do think that in a lot of cases these things are awfully close to one another. And if you think of tax expenditures as we'll look at them later, from a tax reform perspective, and you don't think of them as ways to raise money, but rather if we want to raise the same amount of money, we can do it with a lower rate overall if we spread the base wider. I mean, that's a conservative approach, is to say don't interfere in the market. And this is interfering in the market just as much when you do it through the tax code as when you do it directly. So there certainly is a difference between the two, and you have bureaucrats making decisions in one case more than in another. But the way a lot of these are designed, they sure look like a direct appropriation in terms of the effect. And again, a property tax refund is a direct appropriation. It's aligned the budget. On the other hand, the itemized deduction for property taxes is a subsidy in an indirect way. It reduces your property tax burden. That's in the tax system. Both of them reduce property tax burdens effectively for the homeowner. Both of them do that. They don't do it exactly equally for different people, but both of them do that. They both are, in some sense, offsetting other things, but they're very similar. So I know there's a real angst about the notion of tax expenditures in a lot of areas, but I do think it's a fairly neutral term. I'm still not quite sure where the difference is on individual examples. So maybe you have an example that you would rather share that's a different example than the ones I've given here, but I tried to pick examples where the comparison was fairly direct.
Representative Downey? Representative Dabney?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess responding to Representative Downey's contentions, tax expenditures are all about the government saying we know best. I mean, if they're the term is neutral, you know, I usually throw in anything that Dr. Wilson says because he knows a whole lot more than I do. But let's take a few minutes and visit a couple of tax expenditures and think about them. We have a mortgage interest deduction. It's a tax expenditure. It's the government saying we know best. We want to incent home ownership, so we're going to make it a little easier if you've got a mortgage by giving you a deduction on your tax forms. Well, are we making it easier for folks to own, or are we catering to special interests? In Canada, they don't do that. And yet, they have roughly the same level of home ownership in the country as we do in the United States. But if you touch the home mortgage interest deduction, as Representative Lincheski did, our good friends in the real estate industry go ballistic. It's us saying we know best, so we're going to benefit these people who are paying for their housing one way and ask these people who are paying for their housing another way to pay for it, either through higher taxes or lower government services. We've got a bovine TB tax credit. There's bad things happening in nature for bovines, so the farmers have to respond, and so we're paying them to do that. Okay.
We're letting them keep the money to do that.
Well, we are deciding that we know best about what should be done. I talked to a small businessman in my district over the weekend. He runs a sporting goods shop, not, you know, Dick's or Sports Authority. This is a little guy on a street corner in South Minneapolis. He put $9,000 into skate inventory this fall to sell people ice skates this year. He sold $1,000 worth of skates this year. Nature kind of mitigated against it. If nature mitigates against farmers, we give them a tax credit because we know best. Nature mitigates against this small businessman, we're not going to do anything for them. So tax expenditures are all about the government saying, we know best, picking winners and losers, and deciding which special interests get their back scratched. And anybody who thinks that tax expenditures are anything else, I don't think are looking at the facts and doing a critical analysis of how they're used, how they're proposed, how they're supported, and why they're done. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Representative Downey?
Just a quick response. I mean, You can argue that a tax expenditure is currently defined is government saying it knows best and trying to influence public policy. But the fundamental mechanism of allowing somebody to hold on to their money to do something is totally different than when the government takes it in and turns around and spends it. And that is the fundamental difference between a tax expenditure and a direct expenditure. And maybe the suggestion would be, Dr. Wilson, perhaps you could have a contrarian slide in your presentation next year that might offer an alternative perspective so that we don't just get this entirely one-sided definition. I mean, you could argue that reimbursable credit or something is actually a check going out of the government, but it's still the individual person doing what they will with that money from there to implement the public policy incentive. The minute you take it in and turn around and spend it from within a government bureaucracy according to government rules and processes and delivered by government folks, it's a very different thing, and that's what I was arguing against.
If we get back to Dr. Wilson. And members, if we could direct questions at Dr. Wilson, that'd be appreciated. Dr. Wilson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, I was counting on you for that slide. So I think you've done an admirable job at providing it. So.
I'll appoint a subcommittee to have Representative Dabney and Downey put this together. Dr. Wilson.
I want to just illustrate what's in, and some of you are familiar with this, or something. I just want to real quickly look at what's in for home mortgage interest. Here's an example of what is included, and I want to focus on what's included and what's not included, but what's included in these cases. Home mortgage interest deduction, the first thing we show is a legal citation, so if you want to find out where in the code this is, sometimes if you're looking at it, you can find the actual language. We describe the current tax expenditure for the home mortgage interest, the fact that this is available for second homes, for example, not just first homes, as pointed out. There's some limits on this. It's a very short description, but it tries to define the critical elements of the provision. And then a little bit of history of when it's changed, what's changed. These are very short, but they at least give some feel for it. I would encourage, particularly if you want to propose a change in something, this is a good place to look at it and see if you're really looking at what you think it is from the summary table, because sometimes the names aren't as revealing as they could be. And then where we know it, we show the number affected. In this case, 734,000 people benefited from the mortgage interest deduction in 2011. And finally, we show the dollar amount. So this is the amount of tax relief that is provided by the mortgage interest deduction to homeowners in Minnesota, or at least homeowners who file a Minnesota return. Some of them may be non-residents. But $341 million in 2012. That's tax relief for those people. It's also, if you happen to get rid of it, that's about how much money you could increase in revenue. And we don't present things this way, and I sort of gave a hint last year in both the Senate and the House, and nobody jumped up and sort of suggested it was a good idea. I said you could look at this another way, which is how much could you drop the rate if you got rid of this and held revenue constant. And we know that for tax year 2012, a 1/10 of a percentage point change in each of our three tax rates would cost about $119 million in lost revenue. And so the amount of money here for home mortgage interest deduction would be large enough that we could drop each of the three rates by a quarter of a percent if you got rid of this and wanted to hold revenue constant. It's one way of sort of thinking how big this is to think about rate reduction. So instead of 5.35, you get a 5.1. Instead of 7.05%, you have 6.8. Instead of 7.85, you have 7.7. Instead of 7.05%, you have 6.8. Instead of 7.85, you have 7.6. Now, I'm not suggesting that's the kind of the way you would do a rate reduction, but nevertheless, it's just an alternative way of looking at it, saying that if you didn't have this and you wanted to raise the same amount of money, you could do so with lower rates. And sometimes I think that part of the antagonism toward tax expenditures is we always show them as revenue increases rather than as rate reductions. But I don't think that really deals with Representative Downey's concern.
Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Dr. Wilson. And this, I'm sure, is in the report, but I was just curious offhand if you know how much of the tax expenditure costs for the mortgage interest deduction is for second homes.
Dr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Knuth, we've had proposals in the past to limit the deduction, the mortgage deduction to first homes. So there are some estimates out there. But that's not found anywhere in a tax return. There's no direct way of knowing that. We don't even know who owns second homes in Minnesota, let alone whether the mortgage interest is on a second home. All the support of the federal return is one number, and we can't break that out to the two. So we've had to use aggregate data from the national data to try to figure out how much this might be. But it's noticeable, but not a huge percentage. And I can get you information on it, but I don't know the numbers offhand.
Representative Knuth? Dr. Wilson?
Notice what's not on this slide. We don't have a goal. There's no statement of a goal of the home mortgage interest deduction. Home mortgages. Now, people will say, well, of course we know what it is. It's to increase home ownership, because that's what I think most people would say. On the other hand, is it to increase home ownership, or is it to increase spending on housing? Because most economists who've looked at the home mortgage interest deduction suggest that it does a very good job of increasing spending on housing. People buy bigger homes because it's cheaper to buy housing. But notice there's no goal here. So to evaluate it, you need a goal. So there's no evaluation here. Our tax expenditure budget has no evaluative content. It's just numbers. It's just facts. And so there's nothing here that says good or bad on any of these. For that, you need someone to provide more effort than we've got. My plan was to look at the expenditure budget from three different perspectives in terms of how it's useful. I think what I will do is just very briefly talk about the budget perspective and then talk about the tax reform perspective, which I think is probably there was not a hearing in the House, I don't believe, last year for the tax expenditure review report. There was a hearing in the Senate. If you want to know, that report basically said we ought to evaluate, we set up a method to actually evaluate tax expenditures on an ongoing basis with an 8-year cycle. It actually is a bill that came out of this committee, I believe, in earlier years to set up that commission, that group. And to answer certain questions. This is looking at one tax expenditure at a time and saying, let's compare, let's look at how this is doing. Could it be done better by restructuring the tax expenditure? Maybe you want to expand it. Maybe it's doing such a good job you want to expand it. Maybe you want to restructure it. Maybe you want to, in the home mortgage interest, put limits on. Wisconsin has a tax credit instead of a tax deduction for home mortgage, for itemized deductions, basically. There are different ways to do a tax expenditure. You can also look at how it works relative to a direct expenditure or how it would integrate better. Child care credit might be a good example where maybe the integration of the two would be important. But these are the kind of questions to be asked for. That's one way of using a tax expenditure budget would be to say, here's something, but we really ought to have an evaluative process for these and review how they work. That's not something that's done in this report and not something the Revenue Department maybe should do by itself anyway. But that's one use of the report, is to set up a way you can look at individual ones.
Dr. Wilson, I think what we're going to do here, we had the fire alarm and that took time and all those types of things. I don't want you to have to feel like you got to rush through this. This is important information here for the committee. So I think we'll just stop right here on the, actually you're starting the tax reform perspective, income taxes. I want to give you ample time. This is an important report. So we'll start on page 6. So members, if you could just keep this in your file or take it to your office and study it, but keep it. And we'll start on slide 11. If there's any questions for Dr. Wilson at this point, Dr. Wilson, it's okay with you if we set up another time, because I want to not rush through this. It's too important. With that, members, do you have any questions for Dr. Wilson quickly, or we'll take those when we reconvene? With that, members, good government all the time. We are adjourned.